This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, July 17th. Good afternoon. Thanks for listening. I'm Judson Richards in for Rob Hart. It is the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. Well, the number of parents working second jobs is on the rise. We will cover that in our next segment. But right now, the latest chapter in the Bears Stadium saga that involves a meeting between Governor Pritzker and team president Kevin Warren, joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home. Justin Lawrence, reported with Crane Chicago Business. Justin, thanks so much for your time. So let's discuss it. Why did Governor Pritzker initially reject the Bears' Lakefront Stadium plan?
Yeah, so he has been quoted this idea. He said it's a non-starter, essentially because it requires too much public funding. The Bears were seeking $900 million from the Illinois Sports Facilities Authority to build the stadium itself. They're also seeking $1.5 billion in infrastructure subsidies. And Governor Pritzker just said that's too much for taxpayers to bear. He is not totally dismissed the idea of the state contributing something to the stadium itself, but he's obviously the current deal is not going to work. But so when the Bears were pushing this in the spring, you know, they set up a meeting with the governor's office, and Governor Pritzker was pointedly not there, right? His chief of staff and deputy mayor took the meeting instead, and that's where they called it a non-starter. So he's kind of kept his distance from this, but now that everything's cooled down, there's no deadline on when they would need a stadium deal. It's the summer. He has met with Kevin Warren, and both sides kind of downplay the idea that they discussed any particulars of the deal. It's more of a get-to-know-you meeting. But, it's significant that he's now meeting with him after previously keeping him in arm's length.
What factors would Governor Pritzker consider for the state to support a stadium deal that would be, quote unquote, good for taxpayers?
Yeah, you know, it's hard. I mean, it's somewhat vague language. It's hard to understand how any deal where the taxpayers give a significant portion of money to the stadium would be, you know, quote unquote, good for the taxpayers. But, I think, frankly, that means the Bears who would contribute over $2 billion to this, right, would have to put in more team equity, or they'd have to, you could sell a portion of the team to raise private equity that way. But, it certainly does not sound like there's any appetite at the state level to approve all these subsidies that would, be over $2 billion in public money.
Should we feel at all that this meeting presents more life or breathes more life into the Arlington Heights location?
That's not how I read it. As Kevin Warren has pointed out repeatedly, they are the largest landowner in Arlington Heights now, so that's never going to go away. It's always possible that they truly pivot back to trying to build a stadium right there. All of my reporting tells me that they're still focused on Chicago. They're trying to work out a tax deal in Arlington Heights with the school districts up there, right? So they pay a certain rate of property taxes. But in terms of a stadium itself, I do believe they're still focused on Chicago.
We're discussing Bears Stadium with Justin Lawrence from Crane's Chicago Business. Justin, finally, what are the key challenges the Bears face in securing public funding and infrastructure support for their proposed stadium near Soldier Field?
Right. It's really all with the state, right? Mayor Brandon Johnson has already endorsed their plan. But what they need, unfortunately for them, right, is they need approvals from the state legislature. So they would need to figure out a way to tap into that ISFA money that is available to build stadiums, but the state legislature has to approve additional fund or bonding that they could bond out to provide the funding. So they have to secure that. And then the infrastructure, that there is no clear way to get that. The city has said they would not pay for that. The state seems cool to it. They could potentially tap into federal funds, right? But the feds are very reluctant and won't provide the infrastructure money for stadiums. So they would have to convince the feds that, oh, this is really for the museum campus itself, not just solely our own dome stadium.
Justin, much appreciated. Thanks so much for your time. That's Justin Lawrence, reporter, Crane Chicago Business, discussing the Bears stadium and where they are after that meeting between Pritzker and Kevin Warren, the team president with the Bears. Coming up next, side hustles for moms and dads.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, surveys indicate nearly half of parents in the U.S. are working a second job in the effort to make ends meet. We are joined now by Tessa White, author of the new book, The Unspoken Truths for Career Success, and host of the podcast, The Job Doctor Is In. She is based in a beautiful Salt Lake City in Utah. Tessa, thanks so much for your time. So let's dive into this. Why are nearly half of parents taking on side hustles?
Well, money is the bottom line. I think inflation is really killing people, and needing to have extra money to get your bills and put food on your table is really important. So it's really common. I'm hearing from almost all my clients that they're taking on secondary jobs.
Tessa, I've got two in daycare, so I am up for a good side hustle. Yeah, what advice would you give to parents looking for that side gig?
Well, I would say there's a couple of things. First off, know that there's really big advantages to doing this on your taxes. So this isn't just a one hit by bringing in extra income. If you do it right, you have your own LLC and you are running these side gigs and side hustles through that. You can actually save additional money on your cell phone. You can write off expenses with your car, a part of your home. So there are some real advantages if you do it the right way. Second thing is you got to know where to look. I think that's where people kind of get stuck is what do I do? And there's really two ways to look at it. First of all, if you know what you can do, you can locally source and fill needs. I had somebody the other day who's a photographer that realized that small Airbnb and small food places in her town needed professional photos online. So she just went door to door to take photos, and it's actually turning into more of a side gig. She may be able to quit a corporate job. Other people just don't know where to look, and there's places, and I'll list a few of them, but Fiverr, Upwork, those are for like graphic design, social media writing, presentations. TaskRabbit and Thumbtack are more for service jobs, like fixing things in your home or driving or painting. And then you've got Work Market and Flex jobs that are really specific to remote work and all kinds of part-time and full-time remote work. So there's lots of different places that you can look to find these opportunities.
How can moms and dads or anyone looking for a side hustle effectively balance their full-time responsibilities with that side gig?
I think it's really important that you understand going into it. Is it something that I want specific hours so I know what to count on each night or each day? Or is it something I need to fit in between the cracks? And most people I talk to are just trying to fit something in between the cracks. And that's why finding something within the community that you live is so flexible and so wonderful. I just worked with a stay-at-home mom who had great organizational skills but didn't really know what she had to offer to corporate America, and she needed flexibility. She ended up going and being an errand runner for local nursing homes and then graduated from that into offering to check in for seniors that aren't quite ready to move out of their home and checking in on them, bringing meals and that type of thing. So find a niche in your community. Understand if you can do what your hours can be or if you need flexible, and that will point you towards the things you can do.
That is Tessa White. Tessa, thank you so much for your time discussing the side hustles for moms and dads who may need it. Coming up next, a look at why it's often tougher for many women to save for retirement versus their male counterparts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Women face special challenges when it comes to saving for retirement. Let's get some help from Carolyn McClanahan, founder of Life Planning Partners there in Jacksonville, Florida. Carolyn, good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us. Again, what factors make savings for retirement harder for women?
Oh, well, thanks for having me. And there are a large number of factors. First off, women are paid less than men. Women tend to leave the workforce because they have children, and you know, society expects women mostly to take care of the children. And you know, between all that, it all adds up. So they get less Social Security, they have less retirement savings, and that's why more women end up in poverty when they're old.
So what strategies can women adopt earlier in their careers to mitigate financial risks in retirement, considering potential career breaks?
Well, I think the first thing is hopefully they marry a spouse that would give equal support. And so by that, they would work together so they could both have careers, whether that both of them work fewer hours so that everybody can be equitable on the earnings and how much people are contributing to the relationship. And also with the males helping with things that are traditionally considered women's work. I think we've gotten much better about that, but we still have a long way to go because, you know, some of the things that we believe and participate in are just so ingrained that people don't break them. And then the other important thing is when you enter into a marriage, you know, now women are no longer given lifelong alimony if they get divorced. And so when you enter in a marriage and if you're leaving the workforce, that you create postnuptial agreements on what happens if there's ever a divorce. How are you going to be paid for not only not having saved enough, but everything else that's going to affect your earning potential going forward?
A lot of women are also part of the so-called sandwich generation. Help us understand how that could create issues.
Yeah, that's correct. Women end up being the primary caregiver for their parents or sometimes even their husband's parents. And, you know, they're taking care of their children and their parents. And there's no time to work then because the average caregiving needs can easily be a full-time job. And this is, again, where, unfortunately, in our country, we don't have social policy to help with this. Other countries, they are much more adept at helping women stay in the workforce by providing support, or men participate more in helping with providing the care. So it's a huge challenge, and I think we could all push for social change, and women need to stand up for themselves so they don't get stuck with doing it alone. And hopefully we can help mitigate this as the years go by.
Carolyn, thanks so much for your time. That's Carolyn McClanahan discussing women facing special challenges when it comes to saving for retirement. You can follow her, founder of Life Planning Partners, there in Jacksonville.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Johnson Richards in for Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Foreign policy and national security are on the agenda of the Republican convention in Milwaukee today. An 11-year-old and three teenagers are charged with a violent robbery on the CTA. In Personal Finance Wednesday, it's time to conduct a mid-year assessment of your finances. And more consumers are moving away from wine and embracing alternative beverages. WBBM Business, 81 degrees right now, mostly sunny skies. At O'Hare, check that. That is not business. Here is business. The Dow is up 201, S&P down 74, and the NASDAQ is down 489. Now to your weather. Sunshine, some clouds, rather breezy, less humid. A shower cannot be ruled out, mainly near the lakefront today. Highs ranging from 76 at the lakefront to 81 inland. We have hit that 81 degrees at O'Hare, 82 at Midway, 78 degrees right now at the lakefront. Well, the agenda is full for day three of the Republican National Convention.
The theme shifts to national security and foreign policy. A speech by Ohio Senator J.D. Vance will introduce the vice presidential nominee to fellow Republicans and a wider national audience. President Biden's handling of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, the crises in Ukraine and the Middle East will come under fire, and former Trump administration officials will outline what foreign policy would look like if Donald Trump were reelected to a second term. Former Trump rival Nikki Haley.
A strong president doesn't start wars. A strong president prevents wars.
The Milwaukee audience is expected to hear from former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Richard Grenell, former acting director of National Intelligence, a conservative and openly gay political advisor who served a controversial stint as ambassador to Germany. At a roundtable this week, Grenell told reporters world leaders are uncomfortable with Trump's unpredictability. They don't know exactly what he's going to do next, Grenell says, and that's a positive for the U.S. I'm Jennifer King.
J.D. Vance is expected to address the crowd at around 9:30 this evening. We will carry it live right here on WBBM. A young girl and three teenagers are facing felony charges after police say they beat and robbed a 63-year-old man on a CTA train. The incident happened July 8th on the 100 block of Congress Parkway. The suspects are an 11-year-old girl, a 14-year-old boy, and a 15-year-old girl, and a 16-year-old boy.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
All right, stocks are trading mixed. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jeff Kilbert, founder and CEO of KKM Financial right here in Chicago. Jeff, thank you for your time this afternoon. Today's trade is a tale of two markets. Help us understand why.
You bet. We saw some rhetoric, Judson, out of President Trump really talking hard about semiconductors and potential restrictions on Taiwanese semiconductors. That really was the catalyst for the NASDAQ to see some selling pressure or some profit taking. So the NASDAQ is down about 3%. But what's interesting, Judson, is that we are seeing this rotation. Tech has been a theme and semiconductors have been a theme. We've talked a lot here on WBBM about owning NVIDIA. We are seeing NVIDIA down about 6% today as that profit taking. Rest assured, it's still up about 130% year to date, but nonetheless, you're seeing this rotation. So the Dow Jones is actually the recipient of this Johnson & Johnson. Some of these blue chip boring names are seeing rotation out of tech into the Dow Jones. So there is a positive spin on this, despite the fact the velocity of this move specific to semiconductors and NVIDIA and Broadcom and some of these much loved names that have been the heart of this rally has taken the breath away a little bit of some of the investors.
Let's go a little bit deeper on why the tech stocks are down today.
So the tech stock specifically, when you look at what the catalyst was, it all had to do with some of the Biden administration talking about potential tariffs. But you're seeing global chips really have a problem with what is coming with potential the Trump administration, because we are seeing some comments that are talking about Taiwan potentially paying some security fee and the fact that we've exported this. So in contrast to seeing some of these names like TSMC and NVIDIA and ASML going lower, look at Intel. Intel here domestically could be the new Taiwan semiconductor. Therefore, we're seeing Intel up today. So this is a bit of a shift of outsourcing our chip making. And as you know, Judson, the AI theme is going to continue to move forward. But what is going to be powering that AI theme in 2024 and 2025? That could be a difference. And Intel is a name we've talked about. It's been undervalued, underloved, and it's been a laggard all year. And you're seeing some love going to Intel today.
We're discussing the stock market with Jeff Kilbert, founder and CEO of KKM Financial here in Chicago. So, Jeff, the stocks had a great first half of the year. What's your forecast for the balance of the rest of 2024?
I still remain optimistic, but I think it was too much too fast. We had a straight line move up from last November. The S&P 500 was up nearly 25-30% from that November time frame. So I think as we see prices revalue, prices reset, specifically the tech sector reset, I think this will be healthy. So small caps, IWM is an ETF we bought a couple months ago. We also see the Essential 40, which is one of the portfolios I manage, ESSIX. Those are names, these blue chip names, these undervalued names, away from the semiconductors, away from the tech theme, you're going to see that gravitate. So I am still cautiously optimistic, but prepare for volatility. And this volatility, Judson, allows investors to rebalance and reposition portfolios for the remainder of the year.
How does the Fed play into all of this?
The Fed is really driving the boat. They have kind of signaled that they will begin their interest rate cutting campaign in September. I don't believe that's political. That is just the timeline that they're presenting, that they're going to cut 25 basis points. I think that's positive for homeowners, mortgages, and everything that's tied to some form of loan that should help the economy. However, are they doing it for the right reason? Are they doing it to reprieve and bring down inflation, or are they doing it because they see some slowing economy signs on the horizon?
Jeff, thanks so much for your time. That's Jeff Kilberg of KKM Financial discussing why those stocks are trading mixed today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, taking time to reassess your investments and money that matters as we push past the halfway point of 2024.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It is Personal Finance Wednesday. As we move through the second half of the year, it's wise to see where you stand with investments, cash, and other money matters. Let's get some advice from Mark Horner, Wealth Advisor, Fairhaven Wealth Management in Wheaton here in Illinois. Mark, thanks so much for your time today. So help us understand why the importance or of the importance conducting a mid-year financial review. What benefits does it offer individuals?
Yeah, so Judson, the financial planning process is not just a set it and forget it. You got to set some goals and then monitor your progress towards those goals and then adjust accordingly. Why not ruin the summer by spending some time reviewing your budget and checking your credit score and all the rest. But it doesn't have to be a buzzkill. So for the big B word, the budget, a simple way to look at if you're on track is to just take a look at your checking account statements for the first 6 months of the year. And if less money is going out that you're spending than is coming in, then that's a good sign. Taking a look at your credit card statements to make sure that subscriptions aren't creeping in there and that you're paying recurring fees for things that you just aren't using anymore. That's another good idea. Looking at a retirement plan at work to make sure that you are at least saving enough to capture a match that an employer might be offering, and even better, to make sure that you're maximizing your retirement savings. And then kids going back to school in the fall to make sure that they're squared away, and if they're going off to college, maybe having a credit card or set up with a debit card for their checking account. And then checking in with your spouse or your partner to make sure that they know where to put their hands on important financial information for the household, just in case something were to happen to you. Those are just always good routines to stay in during the course of the year.
Yeah, I feel that this is a little bit like doing homework, where it, you know, the thought of it may be worse than actually sitting down and doing it. And when you get there, it's like, oh, this isn't so bad. What would call like a soft open? What would be the easiest place to begin that wouldn't be that homework necessarily that you dread?
Well, so I think one of the fundamental keys in financial planning is to spend less than you make. And so no plan is going to overcome outspending your income. So starting there, and again, it does not need to be a line item by line item review of the checking account. Just looking at last month, did more money come into our checking account than we spent that went out? That's a good sign, and that's, I think, a good easy way to see, hey, are we on track? And then you can check off a few of these other things and continue to build momentum that we're on the right track. But again, financial planning is much more than just a one-time deal. You do need to monitor your progress and adjust.
Where should the emergency savings fund fit into all of this? Should it be at the very top of the list? Should credit card debt be at the top of the list? What would you place at number one?
Yeah, well, so I mean, again, I'd put at number one making sure you're not spending more than's coming in. Next is to make sure really that you're not leaving money on the table. And so again, that idea of looking at retirement savings at work, if your employer offers you a match of any kind, if you're not saving enough money to capture that match fully, that's the same as turning down a raise. So don't leave money on the table. Make sure that you're capturing all those benefits. Thinking about an emergency fund is absolutely an important thing to do. I'd maybe put that next on the list. We don't want to miss opportunities that we might get to increase our savings. And then also automating things is very powerful, so that you don't need to remember to write checks each month. So as much as you can automate as possible, that's both savings and making sure that you're paying down debt.
Mark, incredibly helpful. Thank you so much. That's Mark Korner, Wealth Advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management out of Wheaton. Hey, join us this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday and, still to come, tracking a trend toward alternative beverages.
It's 60 minutes of financial planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Consumers are increasingly favoring alternative beverages over wine, with a shift towards spirits like bourbon, whiskey, tequila, alongside THC and Kava-infused drinks. We welcome Carly Katz, owner Bottles and Cans in Chicago's North Center and Edgebrook neighborhoods as well. Carly, thanks so much for your time today. So what factors are driving consumers away from wine and towards alternative beverages like the spirits, THC-infused drinks, and Kava?
A lot of it, I think, is just like the trend of something changing. You know, like any other industry, alcohol has their, you know, popular things happening at one point and then not so popular at the next. And so I think people are just looking for new ways. I think people are trying to also amplify their time where they're not having like the really bad hangover the next day where your whole day is kind of gone. So just finding an alternative to avoid that is what we see is driving a lot of it. But everyone has their reasons.
Carly, what specific types of spirits are experiencing significant sales growth, including the high-end options?
So we just in general, we do see a lot of like turning away from like just your traditional like beers and wine, and people are looking more so into doing spirits. Cocktails are still kind of a fun thing that people really enjoy being able to do at home as things become increasingly more expensive. I think just cutting that cost of having to go out is also another thing that kind of teeters people's decision to purchase a higher end like whiskey in the store and then take it home. That way it's kind of lasting you a little longer. But it's just kind of whatever strikes people's fancy, I suppose.
We're talking to Carly Katz, owner of Bottles and Cans. So Carly, THC and CBD infused beverages, they're exploding in popularity. What are you seeing from your locations? Is that accurate? Would you say that they're exploding in popularity?
Yes, that is something that I would say probably in the last like 12 months, we've really seen it kind of come into this like where there was like one beverage that was kind of out in the market. People didn't really know what to think of it. Flora is the one I typically go to because they're local and they're just a wonderful brand and company. But they go through and do CBD, THC drinks. And then they also have like an alternative where it's more of a spritz. So they're cutting down a little bit of that. We see a ton of that. We see people kind of going that direction as far as like just one beverage a night, not doing like, you know, the bottle of wine. But now breweries are also allowed to create THC and CBD drinks as well. So expect it just to keep kind of rolling as we see more and more of those come out.
What about Cava? How close is that in popularity of those others just mentioned?
So the Cava component is interesting. I'm learning about this just now. I know it's wildly popular in Florida. It's a root herb essentially that kind of gives you that dopamine boost, but it also relaxes you. So people have been going towards that. It's just kind of a end of night, maybe before you go to bed beverage. I know that not all of these drinks are created equal. Some of them are for sweetness purposes, doing stevia. Some of them are doing like a little bit more of kind of that juice base, but the seltzer component ones are actually pretty good. And you can find those a lot of places. You don't need a liquor license to sell those. So we're starting to see them pop up in many different types of retail.
Carly, thanks so much for your time today. That's Carly Katz, owner of Bottles and Cans, discussing how consumers are increasingly favoring alternative beverages over wine.